Who would have thunk it? Larry, whose style, typically a little bit more confrontational than I am. We, on occasion, when we communicate back and forth, Larry will identify himself as Mr. Meanie because of the fact that he is a bit more dismissive and confrontational than I am. And yet, here we've just finished a two-hour segment when the calming voice was Larry's, and I was righteously indignant. How do you think about that for turnaround, Larry?
Well, you know, I'm indignant about it. I just I'm at my wit's end. I don't know how you tell people you're being lied to, and they just, you know, turn their heads and say so.
I am frustrated that the universities in America won't tell the truth about little girls being sexually mutilated, 125 million of them, by Islam.
By the way, somebody needs to tell the movie stars out there some truth, and I would hope one of them would be listening because I want to share this truth with them.
Yeah.
There are more homosexual men in Islam than in Amsterdam. Get it? As a percentage.
Yeah.
Here's what happens: they take these kids and they start telling a girl she's sexy. And she's a sex object, and they start covering her head when she's 6 years old. They set the girls in one class, the boys in another. They keep them separate forever. And guess what? In the end of it all, they can't relate to one another.
Right. And they start having sex with, and the boys start having sex with each other because they have no access to girls until they grow up, and then they rape them because they're nothing but a sex object. You know, in Afghanistan, one of the reasons that so many American veterans are taking their lives, some 80 a day, is because the people that we went in to liberate in Afghanistan, when America would turn over a town that America would throw out the Taliban, and the Afghani police would come into that town, the first thing that the Afghani police would do is find the cutest boys, young boys, between the ages of 8 and 12 years old. They'd find the cutest young boys, and they'd sequester them in one of their tents, and they would gang rape the little boy. They called it Bachi Ba, and they would do it with every village.
Yeah, but what they do is they play a game of stickball.
Yeah.
And the winner of the game, that's who gets to take the little boys off to the prison and rape them.
First. You know, they're gang raped. They're gang raped for weeks, weeks on end. I don't want to infer that my rage against Islam is just because Muslims lie. I don't want to pretend that infer that my rage against Islam this morning was because the religion is responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist act. I don't want to pretend that my righteous indignation was generated because of the fact that universities and the media are complicit in promoting the religion and tolerating the religion that is responsible for mutilating tens of millions of Islamic girls and having tens of thousands killed in honor killings every year. But when you have an act of over 200 little girls, 12, 13, 14 years old, that are kidnapped, they're tortured, that are raped, and are about to be sold as sex slaves, and you've got a pompous, I don't even know if there's a word, I'm not going to use a word, because I don't think there is a word that properly describes the Muslim guy, that would go out and deliberately misquote two Quran passages to infer the opposite of what the Quran says, to distinguish Islam from Boko Haram as opposed to hold Islam accountable for Boko Haram's actions. And I think of what's happening to those 200 little girls. I don't know any moral response other than disgust, rage. You know, when Yahweh says that he hates, this is why he hates. You cannot love. You don't have the capacity to love unless you come to hate this kind of behavior, this kind of religious poison. And if you don't hate this kind of religious poison, then you're incapable of genuine love.
You know, I'm with you. And by the way, you know, just to back up what you said, I'd ran into a fellow that was working in Afghanistan, and you know, as a civilian, you know, with a private company, and he told me that the saying over there is that women are for children and little boys are for fun.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
Typical.
That's typical. Yeah, it is. It's the most disgusting, perverted, duplicitous, damning, and deadly and destructive religion ever conceived by man.
Well, I've got
issues, and we're going to go right now to Christianity, and I've got my issues with Christianity, and it's created exactly like the Muslim guy created this lie on behalf of the New York Times and CNN. Exactly the same way. But, you know, and you have a lot of Christians out there being pedophiles, and I care a lot about that. But I'll tell you what, I can't imagine anything than violent Islamic terrorists torturing and raping 12-year-old girls that's going to cause me to, that they have kidnapped. They're going to cause my blood to boil any more than it does at this moment.
Well, yeah, there's, it doesn't get a lot more despicable than all that, does it? I mean, it really
No.
does.
And this guy, this Muslim guy with his beautiful portrait of himself in the subtle gray tones and his pretty little scarf as he's looking off into the distance with this egotistical list of all the places that he's been the keynote speaker and all the media outlets that have featured interviews with him. You know, thank God there really is a hell.
Yeah, let me
thank God there is a hell for these kinds of individuals.
Mm-hmm. I want to juxtapose Paul to Muhammad. Remember, Muhammad said, "If I take an oath and find something better,
right,
then I expiate my oath."
Yeah, which means I just cancel my oath. What he's saying is, I'm a liar. You ought not trust me.
Right, and now here's what Paul says to the Jewish. I came to exist like a Jew in order to take advantage and profit from Jews. For those under the Torah, I acted like I was under the Torah. Not that I myself actually existed under the Torah. In order to take advantage of and make profit from those of the Torah. To the Torahlessness, I was Torahless. Not being God's Torahlessness, but to the contrary, subject to the law of the Messiah in order to take advantage and profit from the Torahlessness. Okay? Now, you know, it sounds like the same thing,
isn't it?
Yes.
I'll say and do anything, and if you try to look for contradictions in what I'm saying and doing, which would cause you to recognize that I can't be trusted, then just understand that contradictions and duplicity are all part of my strategy. That's like the Quran 2106, a passage that comes before the Muslim man began to cite from the Quran. And it says that when Allah recognizes that, you know, we've got a verse, and that verse is invalid. We misspoke. And so we'll bring a new one which contradicts the old one, and we just want you to throw the old one into oblivion. Yeah, some god, huh?
Yeah. Well,
by the way,
Yahweh's words never contradict themselves, not once, not ever. Throw Paul out and get your translation straight. You'll find out they're seamless from start to finish.
You know, it's funny that Quran 2106, the abrogation verse, which tells you that unless you arrange the Quran in chronological order, you don't have a prayer of understanding what it actually says. And the Quran currently is in a jumbled mess, actually, with the last verses being first and the first verses towards the
end. Couldn't even write it in chronological order.
No, couldn't. Or even compile it in chronological order. But what's interesting...
Yeah, and yet God was responsible for it.
Of course, yeah. You're right, yeah. God say, you know, DNA must have been just an accident. Okay, so here you've got Quran 2106, which says, everything that I've said previously that I'm now contradicting, I want you to throw what I have said previously into oblivion and only pay attention to what I'm saying now. Do you know of another individual that promoted that same kind of philosophy? Throw the old into oblivion when I'm contradicting it and only pay attention to the new?
Yes, I do. I do. His name was Question Him.
Yeah, Paul.
The old.
That's correct. That's exactly Paul's approach, is disregard my contradictions of the Torah, because I want you to throw the Torah into oblivion so you can focus on what I am bringing now. That's exactly his strategy. And some 2.5 billion people in this world have been beguiled by him.
It's astounding.
And the only way that you can be beguiled by Paul, the only way you can be a Christian, is either to be ignorant of what Yahweh actually said, or to be irrational and not care that they are in conflict. If you're incapable of seeing contradiction or dealing with contradiction, unable or unwilling to deal with direct conflict, and you don't recognize the two things which say exactly the opposite can't both be true, if that is your problem, then you can be knowledgeable, but you're just a nincompoop because you can't think. You're irrational.
Well, you also couldn't believe what Yahusha said, who said, when I return, everybody's going to see me.
At one time. And Paul claims that he saw him all by himself. Actually, he says that two other guys may have seen them, but those guys really aren't known. And we don't really know exactly where we are. We don't know exactly when it happened. We don't really know if those other guys saw him or not. Because I've got three different variations of what happened on the road to Damascus. But he said, I saw him. I saw him. I saw the Jesus. I saw him. I saw him right there myself. I saw him. It was a bright light in the sky. I saw him. And you ought to believe me that I saw him. And what did Yahusha say about somebody who claims to have seen him in the wilderness?
He said, do not trust that person. You'll lose your place in the inner circle. He's a liar. Yeah. That's right. So in other words, to even believe that story, you would absolutely have to be calling the Savior and Creator a liar.
Okay, so when Paul said that the Torah enslaves, and that if you entrust, if you value the Torah, if you try to observe the Torah and apply it to your life, that you are condemning and enslaving yourself. What did Yahusha say at the conclusion of his Sermon on the Mount to those Christians that were calling him Lord, Lord, and then they claimed they had done all of these marvelous things in his name? They've cast out demons in his name even. What did he say to them?
He said, I don't know you. You've got to get away from me because you have disregarded the Torah.
He did, didn't he? Oops. Now, how would you reconcile that as a Christian, since all Christians disregard the Torah? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yesterday in our program, we went over two of Paul's statements, both of which he claimed that the Torah was incapable of saving, and that there would be absolutely no way to be saved by the Torah. And in the first of them, he misquoted a Torah passage that said exactly the opposite, that you do yourself harm if you don't embrace the Torah. And in the second, he said you can't be saved by the Torah. The only way to be saved is through faith. When the passage not only said exactly the opposite, it's through trust and reliance, which requires knowledge and understanding that we are saved. But it was interesting.
Yahusha, when the prediction of Yahusha, and in order to be the Hebrew Messiah, you had to meet this requirement. He said he's the living embodiment of the Torah. The living Torah is in his mouth.
Yes. That's what Yahweh said of him. I would think, I'm just going to go on a presumption here. Just as this is a wild fling here from left field. I suspect that God knows exactly who the Messiah is.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking that. That's why I brought that up.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, I would also think that somebody as infamous as Paul, somebody who would misquote him to beguile people to believing the opposite of what God actually said, and would claim at the same time to be speaking on behalf of the God that he is misquoting and whose testimony he's annulling, you would think that God would also be familiar with that kind of a guy, particularly if he beguiled on the upwards of 10 billion souls.
Right, and maybe that's why he wrote about him in Chabahook.
Oh, yeah. Now, wasn't Chabahook the passage that Paul cited to promote his agenda? In fact, I think it was the second passage
quoted it. Yeah,
he quoted, misquoted Chabahook 2:4. The passage reads, "Pay attention. He will be puffed up with pride. His soul is not right or straightforward in him. So, therefore, through trust and reliance, by being firmly established and upheld by that which is dependable and truthful, those who are upright and vindicated shall live." Now, let's turn to Chabahook 2. Now, later in future programs, we're going to cover every word of Chabahook, from 1 all the way through chapter 2 and into chapter 3. And we're going to consider every word.
When Shimon Kephish talked about Sheol?
Yeah.
In the oldest parchment verse we have, what he said was, he said that he does not, he speaks in circular ways. He speaks around things. Right. And then right there, Yahweh is saying his soul will not be straightforward.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm making a connection here. Yeah. All right, so here's Chabahook, and I'm going to just give it on the top line summary here, beginning with verse 1, chapter 2. Upon my requirements. Now, Yahweh has five requirements, or the five requirements to participate in his covenant. And you may want to pay attention to those five requirements, because if you're not a participant in the covenant, you can't be saved. Now, salvation is one of the many benefits of the covenant, but salvation as a benefit of the covenant is not afforded to anyone unless they are part of the covenant. There are five requirements. So God says, upon my requirements and my responsibilities. Now, Yahweh, not only are there five requirements of the covenant, there's five responsibilities. There's five promises that Yahweh has made to those who embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant. So he says, upon my requirements and my responsibilities, I have decided that I will literally and continually stand. Now, that means that Paul lied when he said that God is not going to stand upon his requirements and responsibilities.
Yeah, he changed his mind.
Yeah.
But Yahweh says, no, I'm going to stand. Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. So God's beginning this testimony that he's going to call Paul the plague of death by saying, don't think for a moment that I'm going to change. By the way, that's how Yahusha began his testimony. First public statement, Sermon on the Mount. He begins it very early on and says, don't think for a second that I'm going to change, that I'm going to annul anything that's written in the Torah. So Yahusha begins his testimony where he ends up condemning Paul specifically, even by name, exactly the same way. Consistency. It's the hallmark of God. Upon my requirements and responsibilities, I have decided that I will literally and continually stand, and I will choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. So Yahweh, God, is saying that the requirements and responsibilities associated with his covenant, that they not only protect and fortify, but that he himself is going to engage and take a stand on behalf of those. And he, of course, did. That's why
he
himself.
He acted out the Moed Mikra, and that's what he's talking about.
Right. That he himself put himself, the diminished manifestation of himself as the Passover lamb, and his soul went into Sheol to redeem us. So he himself did this. Now we'll continue with Chabahook, Habakkuk 2:1, and continue all the way through Paul, telling us, or Yahweh telling us, that Paul is the plague of death. Through Habakkuk 2:6. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'd like to complete the first verse of 2 Habakkuk. Upon my requirements and responsibilities, I have decided that I will literally and continually stand. I choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. So then I will be on the lookout in order to see what he will say about me, observing how he will question me. How can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, or my response concerning my disapproving rebuke? Now, pretty soon he's going to name the person that he's speaking of here as Shaul, Paul's given name. Larry, you sent me during the break a citation from, it's from a proverb where God is asking some probing questions and then making some important statements. If you have that handy, why don't you share it with our listeners?
You're talking about Yahusha?
No, you just sent me a quote.
Who comes onto the scene, stands upright, enabling others to stand. That's Kuam. And then Kol, which means all the Eretz, earth, without ceasing effect.
Mm-hmm.
What, or Ma, is his personal proper name, Shem? What is his son's, Ben, personal and proper name? Surely you, Yah, know and understand. So that's who comes onto the scene, stands up upright, enabling others to stand, and establishing all the earth without ceasing. What is his personal and proper name? What is his son's personal and proper name? Surely you know and understand.
You know, I do know. But I would say that 1 in 1 million people know the answer to both questions. And you think that everyone would know that. His name, his personal and proper name is Yahweh.
You would
and his son's personal and proper name is Yahusha. Yeah.
You would think that people who claim to care what the Creator says would know that. But I think more people are interested in promoting a tradition rather than knowing the truth. I really believe that.
Then Yahweh answered. By the way, the question and answer is insightful because Shaul means to question him. So then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, he's approaching Chavauk. He says, write this revelation and then expound upon and reiterate it using letters upon writing tablets so that by reciting this, he might run and go away. That's interesting, this runaway. It's how this prophecy regarding Paul originally came to my attention, because Paul speaks of he's running the race in vain, and he's constantly talking about this
run.
Always on the run, and so Yahweh was poking fun of him in his letter, saying he was always on the run. So Yahweh says, I'm answering. I'm providing the answer. So write this revelation down, Chavauk, reciting it, so that you might keep him on the run, is the inference. Still, indeed, this revelation from God is for the moed, the appointed meeting times. It provides a witness and speaks, pouring out evidence in the end, which entraps.
The moed, that would be the fulfillment of those, which is what Yahusha did in 33 CE.
Correct.
And that's when Paulos, he who is lowly and little, well, that's a great mm-hmm. name for somebody standing for Yahweh. He was there
right.
at that time.
Not only was he in Jerusalem learning to be a rabbi,
Gamaliel
at that time, but his first letter appeared 17 years later. So God is saying that this revelation, which we're going to consider now, is for a specific time, and that's the time of the Moed, the appointed meeting times. In Genesis, in the creation account, he speaks of this in the fourth day, the 4,000th year since the expulsion from the garden, which would be year 4,000 Yah. 33 CE was year 4,000 Yah. And he said, so this testimony is for that time. Do you know, by the way, how many years it was between exact number of years it was between the time that Yahweh revealed this prophecy to Chavauk and the time that Paul wrote his first letter?
I do. 666.
Yeah, there you go. 666 years, exactly. So, Yahweh answered, approaching me, and he said, write this revelation and then expound upon it, reiterating it, using letters, writing it on tablets, so that he might run and go away. Still, indeed, this revelation from God is for the Moed appointed meeting times. It provides a witness and speaks, pouring out evidence in the end, which entraps. The extended period of time required for this question to be resolved shall not prove it false. Expect him, in this regard, because indeed he will absolutely come, neither lingering nor being delayed. God is saying that, okay, 666 years from now, this guy's going to come. He's going to come during the fulfillment of the Moed. The first four Moed were fulfilled in 33 CE. Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuot, four most important dates in human history. And so God is saying, you know, I know it's a long time. This guy's going to come. Mark my words. It's not going to be delayed. He is going to come at this time. You pay attention to that. This is not going to be forced.
Now he starts describing this guy. I've got to say this part.
So he's got his timing now. I mean, the timing now is exact. Now he's going to start describing him.
Pay attention.
Pay attention.
He'll be puffed up with false pride. His soul is not right or straightforward in him. So through trust and reliance, those who are upright and vindicated shall live.
You know. Yeah. So there you go. Paul cited from that line. And what God is saying here is that Shaul, who is he going to name later, is going to be puffed up with false pride. And, you know, Paul's letters are just filled with his ego. I mean, Paul's ego is the size of Mount Everest.
Great. I was raised by the best rabbis. Even though Yahusha called them snakes, he bragged about being nurtured.
Oh, yeah. All the great sacrifices that he had made in all of his great letters and his great thoughts and his great preaching. And, you know, he was an egomaniac. And so he's saying that this man, and there's only, by the way, if you look at all of God's spokespeople, there wasn't one of them that was proud. Not one of them. They're all humble.
They don't even tell you about their past.
I don't know anything about Zachariah.
No. I don't know anything about Malachi. I don't know anything about Yashayu. Not really.
We know a little bit about Moshe, but it's not because Moshe told us. And when Moshe was asked to engage, Moses said, "No, man, I'm a stutterer." When Yirmiyah was asked to engage, he says, "Hey, man, I'm way too young for this job. There's got to be somebody better." Every one of God's spokespeople has one common thread, and the common thread is they're all humble.
None of them talk about their education.
None of them.
What they did was they shared Yahweh's words, and they limited it to that. Yeah. That's what they did.
So, indeed, this guy is saying, pay attention. He'll be puffed up with false pride. His soul is not right or straightforward. In other words, he is going to use the kind of circular reasoning that Shimon Kefesh, who Christians know as Peter, accused him of. And so God said, that's his strategy. He's going to twist things. And he's going to use circular reasoning. So the answer for you is to be firmly established and therefore be able to trust and rely so that you're upheld by that which is truthful and are thereby vindicated.
Can I mention what Shimon says? This is 2 Peter 3, 15-17. It's always used, to show Paul is great. Here is what Shimon really said. This is the oldest text that we have of it.
Mm-hmm.
Paulos, through human understanding, stop right there. He said that he spoke with the authority of the Ruach.
Right.
Now, Shimon just contradicted him.
Right.
That has been given to him, wrote to you, and even as in all his epistles inside, they speak around this using circular reasoning. Now, what did Yahweh just say about this guy?
Yeah, he's not straightforward. The circular reasoning.
Okay.
Exactly the same. And by the way, Paul begins by saying, I'm not telling you anything that I learned from men, and yet Shimon Kefesh is saying his letters are all based upon what he's learned from men.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what. So right there, you got a contradiction, and how people say that Shimon was sitting there in favor of him is beyond me.
Oh, I know.
It's beyond.
Particularly since in this very book in Galatians, we're going to find that Shimon literally condemns Shimon Kefesh Peter, and he also condemns Jacob and Yahusha, the three most important disciples. Paul is condemning. So anyway, we'll go on with this testimony. He says, moreover, because of the intoxicating wine and inebriating spirit of the man of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, is a high-minded moral failure and is arrogant with meritless presumptions, he will not rest, he will not find peace, nor will he live. Whoever is open to the broad path and the duplicitous improper way associated with Shaul. He and his soul are like the plague of death. And so those who are brought together by him, accepting him, will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and nations.
Well, there's only one guy I know of in all human history that fits that. And by the way, the MT text, the Masoretic vocalized text, 11th century, says Sheol rather than Sheol. But we are clearly talking about Sheol because we're talking about a man with a soul.
Oh,
Sheol does not have a soul.
And Sheol is not a man. This is all the way through this. It's one male individual. By the way, Shaul and Sheol are written identically in the prophets. There is no distinction between them. And so since Shaul, which is the name Shaul, which is the name of Paul, and he admits that was his given name, and Sheol, which is the name of the realm of death, which is called the place of questioning. It's what Christians call hell, are written exactly the same way in the Hebrew text. So it's God is telling us that Shaul is going to be intoxicating, that he has an inebriating spirit, and that he is a man of deceptive infidelity. That means opposed to the relationship, cheating on the relationship, deceiving others regarding the relationship, only one relationship, that would be the covenant. Treacherous betrayal, because he was born a Yehudim. And so for God's chosen to betray God's Torah and his covenant and him this way is a treacherous act of betrayal. We'll return to Shattering Myths for the last segment after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Moreover, because of the intoxicating and inebriating spirit of the man, of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, is that of a high-minded moral failure and is arrogant with meritless presumption, he will not rest, not find peace nor live. Whoever is open to the broad path and the duplicitous and improper way associated with Shaul. Larry, do you know a broader path in the religion of Christianity?
No. I think it has engulfed more souls than any other religion on the planet. I'm pretty sure.
It's the broadest path. In fact, Yosha said that the broad path leads to the death and destruction of your soul while he was talking about the Torah, saying, you know, the Torah is the narrow doorway that leads to life. And he was speaking of the broad path. In fact, he specifically said that someone who will be called lowly and little, which is what Paulos means, will be the advocate of that broad path that leads to death and destruction.
Yeah, and I have to throw in here, you know, I look at these great names like Eliyah and Zachariah.
Yeah, remember Yah. Yah is God.
Even Yohanan and Matan.
Yeah, Yohanan. Yah was merciful. Matanyah. Yah was gift. And that my name is going to be lowly and lily.
Little.
Yeah, in the Sermon on the Mount, Yosha specifically said that the person called lowly and little was going to be the advocate of this broad path. He and his soul are like the plague of death, speaking directly of Shaul. You know, that this improper way is associated with Shaul. And he and his soul are like the plague of death. And so those who are brought together by him, accepting him, will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and nations. Gentile is used twice here. Paul claimed to have exclusive domain over Gentiles in his letters.
And it turns out that was a lie, too, because Shimon Kafish referenced people at the Jerusalem summit that because words he shared, Gentiles had come to the truth. So that makes him a liar, too.
Yeah. In fact, there's many more proofs of that. They do not ask questions, any of them, about him. That's God poking fun at us because the man's name, Shaul, means question him. They do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word, they lift up his taunts to ridicule, along with elusive sayings, simplistic and contrived equivalencies, and mocking interpretations. controlling through comparison, counterfeit, and cliches, along with derisive words arrogantly conveyed. There are hard and perplexing questions which need to be asked of him, and double dealings to be known regarding him. And so they should say, woe to the one who claims to be great, so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi, when neither apply to him. For how long will they make pledges based upon his significance, becoming burdened by his testimony? Chabaouk 2:2-6. I mean, every one of this, every statement here, drives right to the heart of Paul's letters. Why don't you ask questions of him? That was his name, Shaul. Paul would take terse references. I mean, he would do exactly what the Muslim guy did. He would take three or four words, five words, out of something God said, mistranslate them, and then take them out of context to infer that God said the opposite of what he actually did. Exactly like the Muslim guy did. And Paul would taunt God. He called God's old system, which he created the concept of the Old Testament, pornography. And everything is about elusive sayings, simplistic, contrived equivalencies, mocking interpretations, counterfeits, cliches, derisive words arrogantly conveyed. He's talking to you, Christian, about your New Testament. There are hard and perplexing questions that need to be asked of him, double dealings to be known about him. Claiming to speak for God, he contradicted God. Why is it that so few people understand that that is not acceptable? They should say, woe to the one who claims to be great, to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi, when neither apply to him.
This is a good time to bring up the fact that when you see these Hebrew New Testaments and Aramaic New Testaments, they are copied into that language out of the Vulgate and the Textus Receptus.
Yeah, great.
Same exact mistakes and add-ons.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that claim that they have the original autograph and that all these were written in Aramaic when there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever for that, and that their oldest autographs are from the 5th, 6th, and 7th century when these words were written here in Hebrew by Yahweh 660 years before Paul fulfilled them. You know, with exception of a couple of chapters of Daniel, there was nothing that God said that was in Hebrew. It was, I mean, all of it was in Hebrew, and none of it was in Aramaic.